Today on the Rising Coaches podcast.
It was real tight between that line. So it was really, really nerve wracking, man. I didn't know what was next. I got four kids, no job. We got to find a way.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. All right, welcome to the Rising Coaches podcast. Today we are joined by Keith Pickens, Southeast Missouri State Men's Basketball. Keith, what's up, man?
Not a lot, Gordo. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, coming live from the hotel meeting room, what, in Morehead, Kentucky, right?
Morehead, Kentucky, man. We played tonight on ESPNU.
Yeah, big game. Big national TV game for SEMO.
Yeah, rare moment. You say what?
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often. You got to take advantage of the spotlight. You guys are coming off a win.
Exactly.
Tuesday against Tennessee State, I believe, right?
Yep, Tennessee State. And we actually play Morehead Saturday, so we'll be their first game since then. So they've been preparing for us all week. But it's big stage. We don't get these opportunities much. Just hope our guys attack it and play hard.
Yeah, Morehead's like at the top of the conference standings, right, in the OVC?
Yeah, he's doing a great job. They play really hard, really hard.
Yeah, good, good. Well, good luck. Appreciate you being with us today. Before we get into that, before we get into your career and things like that, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the OVC standings. One category that you're like for sure at the top of, I would think, is – dunking ability from a coach. Can you see this? I don't know if you can see my screen.
I can see it. Yep.
Like this is a little just sample of some of the stuff that you do basically on a daily basis.
Yeah, man. I like to continue to explore my youth and have fun. The guys sometimes challenge me. We go back and forth and we have little competitions, but I love being an athlete and just going to continue to be one until I'm not one.
Yeah, it looks like you got a few more years left of some bounce. So, I mean, is there any other coach? Let's just start with the OVC. Is there anybody that can beat you in a dunking contest?
Absolutely not.
No way, right?
No, I don't think so.
We got to expand outside the OVC. Who in the country can hang with you?
There's some guys. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know it's some other former athletes coaching, and Kim English is one. He probably can still get up a little bit, you know. So it's guys out there that can definitely challenge me, but I like my chances.
But you, Kim was like a scorer, a shooter. You're like known through your playing career as like a high-flying, hard-playing dude.
No doubt, no doubt.
So even if Kim might have some athleticism still – just not what he does, right? It's not.
No. I know he's. I think I've seen him post one maybe in the past year or so, and I was like, okay. And then I know who else am I thinking about? Timothy Pete, who's at Missouri Western. I know he still gets out there, and he posted a video a couple weeks ago playing with his guys and getting up on the rim. So it's some guys out there that can challenge it.
For sure. But I will say, when we worked together at SEMO a couple years ago, our staff, like the staff pickup games the night before – the actual game, we had a squad. I mean,
we did. We didn't lose much.
Yeah, I think the only team that beat us was St. Louis. They had the guard.
The guy that was
I didn't play that game.
Oh, you didn't play that game. That guy was good.
I was in St. Louis, so I went to see some family.
His name is escaping me, but he was a guard at Oklahoma State. He was really good.
Forte, right?
Yeah. He lit us up. But other than that, between you, I was just out there. But between you, Nick LeGroon, and Kevin Kozan, our GA at the time, we didn't lose too often.
No, we got a lot done. I mean, Nick pushing the ball in transition, flying around, Kevin shooting, me blocking shot. It was a good time. We haven't done those since then, actually. We haven't done it harder than this year. You know, COVID, can't do any of that. But even last year, we didn't do anything.
You got to get back out there, man. You got to get the pickup games going. Coach Korn, Brad Korn, your head coach, can play still, right?
Yeah, we still get out there. Actually, about a week ago, we were in a pause, and we had five guys that already had COVID, so they could practice and work out. And it was Wednesday, and I said, hey, we should do something different. You know, we don't want to get monotonous. We only got five guys. So the staff played 5-on-5 versus those guys. And I won't really say what happened. We didn't lose, but we're just out there competing and just playing basketball with the mind. So we still play. Coach still gets out there and plays 1-on-1 with the big guys and some of the guards. He stays active in doing that.
Were you happy with your performance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
you know, just attacking guys left and right.
I love it. A relentless rebounder as well. Very underrated part of your game.
No doubt. No
crash doubt. Offensive glass, unlike any other.
That's the good stuff, the dirty work.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right, tell us a little bit about how you obviously played. You're from St. Louis. You're a good player, played at Missouri State, and then transitioned right into a coaching career at Missouri State. I think you were there for what, 9 years?
Your first 9 years. Year? Yep, 9 years.
A long time. Man.
Yeah, man, it's like I said, St. Louis, fortunate, grateful Coach Martin and his staff, John Harris, recruited me. When I really started talking to him, it was a no-brainer for me to go to Missouri State to play for him, with what he valued. So did that, you know, had a pretty good freshman year, coming off a late season surgery my freshman year. I get hurt. Then I'm coming back from that injury. I blow my knee up. So I sit out my whole sophomore year. We win the league. Coach Martin then leaves Tennessee. Coach Luss comes in, takes me under his umbrella, and we build a great relationship, finish my career out with him. But by this time, I know playing professionally is not happening. I'm a sophomore in college on the floor, junior in the classroom, and I'm just like, all right, what's next for me? And by that time, I knew getting into coaching was probably the best thing for me. I got right into a GA after I was done. I didn't even explore playing. My knees were beat up. It wasn't going to be the best move for me. So GA – then 2 years of that, Coach Luss hired me as an assistant coach. Was there for 2 years. Then we get let go. So, and I mean, it was a great, the best time of my life. I always tell people I really grew up in Springfield because I got to Springfield when I was about 17 years old. So my college, like my childhood days, I obviously grew up in St. Louis, but I really became a man when I got to Springfield and spent those 9 years there.
Tell us real briefly about, you know, playing for Coach Martin. You know, obviously Konzo Martin doing a great job at Missouri this year. He's got them in the top. I don't know what they are. They were in the top 10 for a minute. I think they're still in the top 20.
I believe they're 19th. I keep eye on them. I follow his program. Coach Martin's a great person. One of my mentors. I'm always rooting for him, but playing for him, you just knew, you know, you were going to play hard regardless. And once you get to a point of just playing really hard, good things will start happening. And for him, it was he didn't tolerate lack of effort, especially defensively. So when he bought into that, and I did early, I just bought into being a defensive guy. I didn't worry about anything else, knowing that as a freshman, you know, we had other guys that could score the ball, shoot threes. I wasn't that. So how can I get on the floor as a freshman, defending and rebounding? And I took on that full-fledged, and he understood what I was doing. And, you know, he played me as a freshman a lot of minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, and then you mentioned Paul Lusk came in. You finished your playing career with him, immediately got a GA spot, and then after your GA spot, got bumped up to assistant coach, which is really rare. You got to, you know, skip a few steps and not just do it, but do it at a like a really good mid-major program in the Missouri Valley Conference. What was that like? Like, first of all, what do you think he saw in you to have the confidence to move you up to that spot?
You know, I think so. When I took the GA, he told me, he's like, pick, I need at least a 1 year commitment to this. Cause you know, I didn't love school, but I knew I wanted to get through it and do it the right way. But so he told me he needed a 1 year commitment. I was like, coach, if I'm doing it, I'm finishing this thing. And I was always there. I was always available. I think he liked the fact that I was vocal right away. I didn't pretend to be a GA. I put myself in a position of a coach. He let me do a lot of things, talking to the guys, communicating with guys, coaching the guys on the floor. I was always in the gym with guys working out, doing individuals and late nights, early mornings. He saw that. He saw how the guys took to me. And like I said, great opportunity, forever grateful for that. And Coach Luss, and he's one of my mentors as well.
Yeah, you still kind of, that's still kind of who you are as a coach. You're always in the gym working guys out. I think even if you weren't a coach and you just worked a regular 9-to-5, I feel like you'd still be in the gym morning. Yeah. That's just who you are,
right? No place like it. No place like it, man. The gym is a peace of mind and, you know, time for you can build a relationship with guys and kind of you can do some workout stuff and you can talk to them after, even though it's 5 or 10 minutes when you're done with a workout and guys are just exhausted. That's 5 to 10 minutes to talk to him about something other than basketball that'll continue to build and the trust both ways. And it's just, it's a great feeling.
How important is it for you to be able to sweat with them and go out there and still, you know, give them a look defensively or, you know, be a presence on the court with them? And what are you going to do when you get old and can't move?
No, I that's why I'm keeping my youth as long as I can. But no, I've always said, I want to be the guy who's out there with them, putting in that sweat, so they can see like it means something to me, and hopefully they see, you know, what I'm telling them, what we're doing. Like I want them to just go hard, and because here I am, you know, I don't have to do it. I could just say, hey, here, do this, do that, do that. I'm a coach, but I think putting in that sweat with them, that grind, they like it, especially when it's 1-on-1, because now it's not like just going against a chair or a cone. They get to go against a live body. I let guys dunk on me all the time. I come over weak side defense and I give them the one hand and they, I like just to make it real as possible for them. So now when they get into a game, it's not just that they did it against a cone or did it against the air. They've done it against a live body. And now they can take it to a game and say, okay, I've been here before.
Okay. Let's talk about you getting moved up. Let's go back to that. So you go from GA to assistant coach. Staff chemistry is like a hard thing as it is. How, you know, you got people like in the ops role, in the video role, whatever positions you got that want that job. You got people on the outside that see an assistant job come open and they may have a connection to the head coach and they want the job. You know how competitive this profession is.
No doubt.
How was that a challenge just dealing with like people saying like, what, this dude, like the GA got the job?
Yeah. The most important thing is you always want to block out the outside noise, but the staff that was there, Corey Gibson, Matt Sly, they really advocated for me to be in that position. And they didn't, you know, they weren't trying to pull somebody from the outside. They advocated for me to be in that position because they saw what I did, what I brought to the table. But as a competitor, you know, the Dobo, yeah, you may be a little slighted. You might be upset because you want to get to the next position. And that's what we all do it for. We want to continue to do our jobs at the high level. And then we want to get to the next level. And so there's always that. But from the outside standpoint, you know, I'm sure there was chatter. I'm sure there was people in the league wondering, how is this possible? But I knew Coach Luss trusted me. He trusted what I could bring to the table. The athletic director trusted me. The president trusted me. So all of those things lined up. And, you know, that's why I tell the guys now, it's all about how you do things and how you go about your business, because you'll never know who's watching. And if one of those people say, hey, let's do it, let's go a different direction, then it doesn't work out for me that way. And I don't know where I'd be right now. I mean, I'd still grind and work at it, but I don't know what path I would have taken.
Sure. Sure. You guys had a successful run there at Missouri State. You guys won a lot of games. You had some good teams and really talented dudes. And then ultimately got let go. I think the last year, I don't know. I mean, if I remember this correctly, but I think your second to last year, you guys had some heat on you and there was chatter that they may make a change in the program. You guys ended up getting an extra year. And in that year, there were some like freak injuries, some freak incident that led to a lawsuit against the school. Yeah. I don't know how much you can get into all that, but like, talk about just like some of the chaos of that year and just coaching from the hot seat in general.
Yes. So my first year, we go into the season, we kind of know what's going on. And I think that was a big reason Coach Lust wanted to keep it tight and just and elevate me to that assistant spot. But we got to the quarterfinal of the MVC tournament. We had swept, I think, you and I that year, which we hadn't done in a while. So we showed some progress and some growth. We were returning a lot of guys that, you know, ultimately we were picked to win the Missouri Valley, and we didn't. But it was tough going into that last year because you knew it was, you know, probably make it to the NCAA tournament or you're out, right? So just waving through that, getting through that and understanding what every game meant. And we couldn't just tell our guys, hey, we got to win this for us. We want to win it because we want to win. But I don't know if they always knew what the pressure was. You know how it is when, you know, guys don't understand what we're up against at times. But we go through that season and it gets about the midway point through the Missouri Valley. I think we had 6 or 7 wins. And we have a freak accident, like you mentioned. And, you know, our sixth man, probably sixth man of the year in the league, he goes down, and another one of our role players go down. The psyches of our players go down because they're freaked out, and we're on our way to Bradley, and we had to leave those two behind after an incident. And it just really messed with the guys and their mentals, and we really never recovered from that. And it was maybe 5 or 6 games left, maybe 7. And we never got over that hump, and we found a way to win a couple. And so we entered St. Louis, the Missouri Valley tournament, knowing we have to win this thing or else, you know, it's over. And you get to that point, you want to give everything you got and keep fighting. And we did. We fought to the end. We won the first game of the conference tournament. And then we fell after that to, I believe it was Loyola, maybe. I forget. But and then after that, shortly after, we knew, like, I mean, it was immediate. It wasn't time in between. Just knew, okay, season's over. This is over.
So how far after? Like, was it the same day as you lost the game in the tournament that you guys got let go?
Yeah, so we lost the game. We get back to campus. I want to say maybe we left that night after the game. And the day we got back to campus, we met and it was it. Yeah, so it was a day or two max.
Well, at least they ripped the Band-Aid off. I've been in those deals where – it's like 2 weeks later and it's like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, no
doubt. What did you waste my time for?
Yeah, they got right to it.
Yeah. So I guess advice to anyone, if you have to fire someone, just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. Don't wait.
So here you are, you're 9 years into Springfield, Missouri. You've never been anywhere else as a coach or even as like a college player. I mean, were you freaking out a little bit? I think you also, right around that time, you found out you already had a son, but you just found out that you were having triplets, right?
No, actually,
the triplets were born.
The triplets were born, like, I want to say 2 weeks before we got let go. Yeah.
Wow.
2 weeks before. No, 2 weeks or a week after. It was real tight between that line. So it was really, really nerve wracking, man. I didn't know what was next. I got 4 kids, no job. We got to find a way.
Crazy. So what was your mindset other than just like changing diapers 24/7? I can imagine with three little ones, like what was your mindset in terms of trying to find the next opportunity?
Man, you know what? I didn't realize it as much as like when I talked to my wife after, but I was in the dumps. I was still happy with my kids and the situation I was in with my family. So it kind of it helped me a lot. But man, she would say, you sit there and just, you know, watch Chicago PD all day and like literally just be sitting in a chair, rocket chair, watching Chicago PD, like wondering what's next. Teams are finishing out. You know, you want to get to the Final Four, you want to try to network, you want to, you know, have your mentors helping you out, you know, what avenues to take and, you know, what's going to happen on other staffs, you know, cause it's always some turnover somewhere. But I was really in the dumps more than I recognized myself. But after talking to my wife, she's like, and I had facial hair and just no haircut, just hanging out with the kids at home, man. And it's just waiting for it to see what the next opportunity is going to be, what I was going to chase and, you know, who I was going to build those relationships with.
So you get the job at SEMO with Rick Ray's staff. You know, you walk into a team that wasn't very successful. I wouldn't even say, I don't know if we were in a rebuild mode the first year you got there. We just weren't very good for a variety of reasons. But it's on paper, it's a great fit for you, right? Like, what, an hour and a half from St. Louis? Yep. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, that experience getting there at SEMO and your first time going to a new school and new program, new coaching staff, not from the, even though Rick Ray and Konzo Martin are tight and they did work together at Purdue, yeah, not necessarily under that coaching tree. So yeah, tell me a little bit about that experience.
And obviously Coach Martin and Coach Luss, obviously they helped me a tremendous amount in that process to connect with Coach Ray, and forever thankful and grateful Coach Ray for giving me the opportunity. But yeah, like you mentioned, it was new. Actually, when I got the job, I was excited because I knew Denzel Mahoney was still on the team, and you know, coming to a situation. And then about a week after I signed, he was on his way out. So like you said, a rebuild year, we had some talented guys coming in. I didn't really know what to expect. I know, you know, program where it was and where it had been. But I was super excited because I was like, I want to help be a part of a change and hopefully I can come put my imprint on the program, however it may be. But yeah, it was a lot of frustrating days trying to figure it out, trying to learn what this school's about, getting around campus, who to talk to, like who's going to help me in different ways, who can I help, who can I serve. So it was definitely a challenge, but I was excited and I was accepted.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that like you got in the job and Mahoney was still.
Yeah.
So you I was texting the year him. After Mahoney left.
Yeah. I was texting him when I got the job, like, hey man, going to be working with you, excited. We text back and forth a couple times, a couple days actually. And then about a week after.
Gotcha.
I saw that he was leaving.
Yeah. So the program was in decent. I mean, we had some pretty good years there. Yeah. And the year before we were just under 500, I think.
Yeah.
So anyways, okay. What did you learn? Just starting over new somewhere that, you know, first time out of the nest of Springfield, what lessons did you learn and figure out how to get like acclimated to a new program?
Just really being open and like learning from the assistants that are already in place. You know, I was fortunate to come to a situation where you and Coach Nick LeGroom were already there, and just being able to figure out, you know, what this coach expects, how he wants it, what does the scouting report look like, what does the day-to-day look like. You know, all those things are important, but you have to be open to everything, the change, the culture. And I know we were in the process, we were still trying to build and create the culture. But just, you know, and then you would always tell me, don't be shy. Like, you're here for a reason. I remember that. You told me that all the time. You're here for a reason. Like, don't wait. You got something to say, say it. And so I just being forward and not being afraid to, you know, not necessarily step on toes, but just not be afraid to just give your thoughts and give it up front and whatever it takes, you know, just to give it. I remember you telling me that all the time, and it still sticks with me to this day.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And now let's talk about the change at SEMO. So you're there for 2 years with Rick Ray's staff. They get let go. You're kind of in limbo. Talk about that. I mean, here we are again, you know, 2 years after getting fired at Missouri State. That's just the profession, but you face another, you know, situation like that at SEMO. What's going through your head then? And how are you trying to, you know, figure it out?
Yeah. So obviously, going into year two at SEMO for me, you know, it's similar to the last year at Missouri State. Okay. Like, it's the business. We know the business, and you can't pretend to not, and you can fool yourself and say, things will be all right. But you knew if success wasn't in order, what you were up against. So I didn't pretend like I didn't know. I was still going to do my job to the max. I was 2 feet in. But at the end of the day, I knew there was a great chance that if we didn't do what we had to do, we were going to get fired. And, you know, starting the season off how we did and getting into league play, not winning a game until, you know, the middle of the league. By that time, I knew this was over. And, right, you know, the energy around town, the message boards, not the message boards, but the papers that are going out, you see all that stuff. And there's people around you who know what's going on, and you just figure out what's going to happen, and you have to start being open. Like, okay, I know this is going to happen. Okay, what can be next for me? You know, and for that, at that time, you say what was in my mind? It was a lot. It was some doubt, right? Because here I am, get fired 2 years later, get fired again, and I'm like, man, like, you start questioning yourself, like, am I the issue? Am I the problem? You know, what is it? You know, all of these things going through your head, and you can't let it cloud you, and you got to stay clear minded because there's so much going on. And at that time, we get through the OVC, and Coach Ray gets sick, and I'm coaching two games late in the season, and we go 2-0 that weekend, and everybody's excited, and everybody's texting me, tweeting me, and like, it's just, and that became overwhelming, because then now there's more pressure on, because here we are, I step in, I win two games, and now we get back and we lose games, and everybody's like, you just see the writing on the wall, you just can't pretend, you can't fake it, just see it, and then try to figure out the best avenue and the best thing you can do within that situation to get to the next.
Yeah, not an easy profession, and not easy to be put in those situations for sure. So obviously you end up getting retained at SEMO and staying on with Brad Korn, who you've known for years. I think he coached you a year, didn't he?
Yep.
During your time? Okay. That's another hard position to be in, right? To be the one guy, the holdover from a previous staff. I kind of had a little bit of that when I was at Clemson. I worked 2 years with Oliver Purnell, and then I stayed on an extra year with Brad Brownell. And in a lot of ways, it's great because people are coming to you constantly, like, you know, asking, like, how things get done, you know, just simple things, like, from – you know, how do we handle official visits to, like, what's a good place to go eat lunch? So that's cool. Like, you're getting, you know, involved in a lot of stuff and your hands are on a lot of things. But it's also was like challenging because you got a new staff that wants to change the culture and make it their way. And for me personally, in that situation, it was, you know, constantly a balancing act between, like, telling them how it used to be done to, like, we don't really care how it used to be done. We want to do it our way. Yeah. Did you experience anything like that or no?
No, see, it was great points. Like, no, there was certain questions on buildings and things on campus, but I always made sure to not say, this is how we did things, this is how we do things, because it didn't work. You know, so who am I to say, this is how this works, this is how that works? Well, it didn't work. The program wasn't in a good position. The program didn't grow. The program didn't move in the right direction. So I wasn't going to do that. I knew I wasn't going to do that. I actually heard that a long time ago, you know, coming into a new situation, you don't sit here and talk about the old stuff because it didn't work. And that's from the operation side to the, you know, and we haven't had visits. But I've been able to help in areas like, you know, I know what's in Morehead. You know, these guys haven't been to Morehead. I know what's at UT Martin. So I can help in those ways, whether it's what should we eat for pre-post game or small things that, you know, I can help and help the program in the right direction. But the other stuff from the management operation on floor, I wasn't carrying any of that over. I had to release all of that. It wasn't a successful part of my career. So I'm not going to carry it to the next part of my career.
How has it been? How's the experience been? What has it been, about 6 months?
Yeah, about 6 months. It's been funky, man, because, you know, first 3-4 months, you know, we're just all working from home. Coach Korn hasn't met any guys, maybe two or three who just popped by in town because everybody's at home. So it was we did a lot of Zooms to get to know each other. I actually knew one of the assistants, Sam McMahon, because he was my ops when I played. Like I said, Coach Korn had coached me my senior year. Then when I was a GA, he was at Missouri State those 2 years as assistant coach. When he left to K-State, that's when I got promoted. So that kind of all aligned. And so, like, I played for him, worked together. So we already had a prior relationship. But it's been a smooth transition. It's probably about as smooth as it can go, because I know some people can get left in these situations and they don't know anybody. So they don't know the head coach, they don't know any assistants. I was fortunate to know people already coming into the situation. So it's just about now our working relationship. How can we do it from a professional standpoint? What do you need from me? And then me finding a way, how can I help him in every way possible to get this program headed in the right direction?
Yeah, that's great. Have you had a different mindset or a different approach to how you go about things on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I always remain who I am. But just the clear mind part is the biggest thing for me. And it's, you know, the style of play, how we defend, like all of those things, learning what we expect here. Those things change, but you know, my integrity and my respect and the discipline I have for the game, that those things don't change. It's who I am. So, I remain the same there, but just off the stuff on the court and in the office, you know, what is he looking for with scouting reports? How much film are we going to watch? Like all of those things I completely wanted to get from him. I didn't want to say, okay, well, this is how I did it in my last setting with my scouting reports, or this is how long I watch film. No, I want to see, okay, let's talk about it. How much film do you want to show? What's important to you? All those things. I just completely blanked the slate and got it from the new situation.
Nice. Okay. The last thing I kind of want to talk about is recruiting. We'll talk about two things, recruiting, and then we'll get into like development of athletes. On the recruiting front, again, kind of unique, your whole coaching career has been in Missouri. You're from St. Louis, right down the road. So you've really gotten to focus on, you know, recruiting St. Louis and Missouri as a whole. How has that been? Has that been great? Do you wish you could get out and you know, I'm sure you're able to recruit nationwide, but like, do you want to challenge and get implanted into a different city at some point and learn to know it and be part of it like you are in St. Louis?
Yeah, the truth is, I don't think you ever know any place like you know home. I mean, we know that. Sure. So the relationships I have and the people I know, the connections I have, those will never be as genuine as they are at home. So having that and, you know, coming to SEMO and trying to make St. Louis important to SEMO, trying to make SEMO important to St. Louis, the both ways. And because guys haven't come to SEMO. A lot of guys haven't come to SEMO. A lot of guys haven't been a fan of SEMO. So how can we make SEMO stick out? How can SEMO be important to them? And it's just people knowing me, building relationships and getting to know them. But in this time of not being able to get out on the road, just to continue to build strong relationships in St. Louis and talking to guys, watching film, that's been a great thing for me because I don't, you know, it's right down the street. I mean, we obviously can't go on the road, but being able to just talk to those people. But eventually, you know, you want to continue to work it. You want to be able to be well versed. I feel like I can go anywhere and recruit because I'm a people person, love talking to people. So I can go anywhere and build a relationship. And, you know, it's genuine on my end, and I hope it's genuine on their end, but I can't control those things and people's expectations. I can just do what I can do in that process of building that relationship with that student athlete, that coach, that parent, and just going from there. I feel like I can go anywhere and talk to anybody. That's not an issue.
Everybody comes on here and talks about how their like city is the best basketball, most underrated basketball in the country. Todd, give us the case for St. Louis. Obviously, there is great ball there. There's great coaches and programs at the high school and grassroots level. Talk a little bit about St. Louis hoops.
I mean, I think it speaks for itself in a way, man. You know, you got some of the best NBA players right now from St. Louis, and they continue to rep St. Louis and makes people proud of St. Louis, and you got all the former basketball players coming from St. Louis, and you count East St. Louis in there as well. Just that metropolitan area, St. Louis is a place where people are tough. They want to learn a game. You know, just everybody excited about basketball. When you know somebody that's good at basketball, like that high school kid is a hero. You know, we got Mario McKinney, he's a St. Louis hero just from being in St. Louis, knowing the people, and just being a really good basketball player. And you just got so many more guys everywhere. If you look around, it's a bunch of players from St. Louis, and it's a bunch of players from everywhere. But St. Louis to me means a lot, and you know, we rep it, and we're proud of all the St. Louis players, whether I know them personally or not. We talk basketball, and I'm saying Jason Tatum and Bradley Beal are, you know, two of the best players in the NBA, and it's not even a question. So, and to other people, it may be a question, but for me, it's no question.
Yeah, for sure. And you got, like I said, you got great coaches. I know you probably can't talk about it, but like Ramey does an unbelievable job. The Southwest Illinois Jets are great. The Gateway AAU program, you get some really, really good coaches. Yeah. That's just on the grassroots side. There's tons of great high school programs in St. Louis. So you got people really teaching the game from an early age, and combined with, you know, just the talent that comes out of the city, makes for really good basketball. Really fun to watch. I really enjoyed watching some of those Christmas tournaments and just the high school ball out there. Really good.
No doubt. For me, Ramey, I played for Ramey, and, you know, great relationship with him to this day. I'll tell people, I remember his son, Courtney Ramey, who's now at Texas, being on AAU trips with a little basketball, dribbling all around, crossing people over, and now I'm watching them on TV. So I love it. And, you know, don't forget about Bradley Beal Elite. It's just so many good programs. And I think the biggest thing that sticks out is the longevity. You look at some of these high school tournaments, how long they've been going, how long these AAU coaches have been coaching their programs, how long the high school coaches have been coaching these teams. And now I'm what, 10 years, 11 years out of high school, and I go back and it's some of the same coaches, Jay Blossom at Webster Grove. They're just still there, and everybody loves it, and everybody cares about it, and they give everything to it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, along with the recruiting front, once you get guys on campus, you know, you talked about how you build relationships with guys. What are some of the things that, like, you try to focus on with your guys that, you know, wasn't taught or isn't being taught on a, you know, large scale?
Yeah, so you always want to do the simple things, like just simply presenting yourself in every way, just how you look and how you do anything, how you do everything. So those are important things from the beginning. But the big thing is, like, what's after college, right? And, you know, a lot of these guys are going to play in the NBA. Some of them have aspirations to play overseas. That'll happen. Some will be short-lived, some will be long-lived. But what's after that? Ball deflates. And, you know, are we teaching, you know, these guys how to – what it means to build wealth, what wealth means, and how to grow their own brand and be a business person themselves. And so many times, you know, you go through college and the programs and you get your education, but all they have taught you to do is to be a really good worker for somebody else's company. And I'm to the point now, and I didn't learn this when I was a player. So now I can get back and have these conversations with my guys and, you know, learn about the stock market, learn about real estate investing, learn about different ways you can truly build wealth for you and your family, not just make some money and spend it. You know, what are the core things that's going to help do that? And they're not teaching in the school. We all know that. So as a coach, as a man, I feel like I'm responsible to help guys in these situations, not just on the basketball floor, but like when I'm off with them, and you know, when you're on the court, obviously got a job to coach basketball and push them in that area. But when we're off and we're just having casual conversations, what can we talk about to get their mind stimulated? And now we got plenty of guys on our team talking about the market and trying to figure out what's next. It's just those things that'll really help their lives and their families, not just the now and the basketball. And I think if we all can take more time and teach those things, it's critical, and we'll see a development in men these days.
Do you have any resources that you use to help school guys on some of those things?
Yeah, well, for me, like I said, I'm picking it up myself, and I just got into real estate investing, got my first property a couple months ago, so looking to get my second one here in about a month or so. And just for me, I have a realtor who is a real estate investor mentor, building relationship with people at the bank, like, because those are the people who are going to finance things. So how can I take what they teach me and push it on to the development of our guys? And I spent time sitting down with, you know, the president of banks in Cape, and like I said, the realtor, and, you know, reading books, how much can I soak up? And I when I first approached the situation, I approached it on I want to learn this basis. And so I took the time. We were in quarantine, couldn't coach ball, just watching film and trying to figure out what was next with the new staff. So I picked up books, I picked up the phone, talked to people, tried to understand the business of real estate investing, and I got the hang of it. And now, you know, 6 months later, I have my first property. You know, so to me, that's what it's about. And now that I know this and I'm learning more of it, how can I, you know, continue to push this forward? And for now that I got I understand the real estate, the realm of that, and how to roll over equity and do all of those things. Now I'm getting into the stock market, and now I'm reading books about the stock market. Actually, I got it right here. I'm reading a book about the stock market, and I want to learn more about it. So it's important to me, and I want to make it important to our guys as they continue to develop and they get to their basketball careers, and not just say, okay, I got through college, got my degree, now let me go work, you know, up the street here and work for somebody for the rest of my life and get caught in that rat race. And so I want them to think like a businessman, think like a boss, and those will be the ways that they can help their families in ways that they probably weren't helped when they were kids.
Yeah, I love it. That's what it's all about, impacting these guys beyond just the game. So
no doubt.
Congrats on your new property, and congrats on diving into more stuff. I'm going to be calling you for stock tips pretty soon.
I don't have it figured out. I don't have the whole grasp of it, but I'm starting to get it, man. And it's fun. It's interesting. Just the simplicity of it when you really get into it and learn it, man. It's good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Keith, appreciate you being on today, and good luck tonight. ESPNU, 7 Eastern, right? Or 7 Central?
It's 7 Eastern. Yep.
7 Eastern. All right. ESPNU, check out the Red Hawks versus Morehead State. Good luck, man. Cool.
Thanks, Gordo. I appreciate you having me on here, man.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.